Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thank you for joining the fun and frivolity here around the Friday night campfire. We'll be giving away a podcast subscription tonight. All I have to do is get the right answer to our podcast trivia question. That'll be next hour. And what else we got tonight? Nothing? Okay, let's all go home. How to begin? There's just so much. What do you think Herman Cain's going to say tomorrow? Do you care? I know. Neither do I. But Amnesty International is calling for the arrest of George Bush. Bush is traveling overseas in Africa. He is part of an HIV/AIDS awareness effort. Along with cervical and breast cancer awareness across the African continent. And he participated today via satellite where he was joined by Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And Amnesty commended the philanthropic nature of the president's trip, but said in a statement that doesn't excuse what they believe are breaches of international law. What they believe. Well, I'll tell you what. It's what anybody who understands the law as written after World War II believes. You know, seriously, I've mentioned this before, and I guess nobody really cares anymore. But, you know, we hanged people. We executed people in both the Japanese and the German high command for what we deem to be crimes against humanity, war crimes. And if we do not apply the same standards to our own leaders, then what we did with the German and the Japanese high command amounted to judicial murder. It's just very simple. Seriously, it's very simple. And for Bush and Cheney and the rest of these monsters to be just, you know, skating around the country, around the world, going where they want to go. There are places now, I understand, that Cheney won't go near. Kind of like places where Henry Kissinger won't go near either, another war criminal. But Amnesty issued a statement yesterday asking the governments of either Ethiopia, Tanzania, or Zambia to take Bush into custody for Bush's complicity in torture and his unprovoked invasion. You know, but war crimes, very simply, war crimes. The Amnesty statement from senior legal advisor Matt Pollard said, quote, international law requires that there be no safe haven for those responsible for torture. Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Zambia must seize this opportunity to fulfill their obligations and end the impunity George W. Bush has so far enjoyed, end quote. Won't happen. You know it won't. I know it won't. And I think maybe what we ought to start teaching our children. Another joke, like we're going to do this, right? We should teach our children that it is true that the winners write the rules and that the executions after World War II of the leaders of our enemies, those executions were, in fact, examples, hardcore examples of judicial murder. And you know, then be done with it, right? Why not? Why not be honest? Is there any chance that ever we can just, I guess not. All right. Let me get away from that for a second. Boy, is that a depressing way to start the program. This first hour is sponsored by Alice in Arkansas over at Heel and Hollers. And here's her message. No thundering crowds, no police or private security, no tasers or pepper spray, just a peaceful moment online at healin-hollers.com for luscious creams, fragrant essential oils, and soothing salves and lip balms for your personal and holiday needs. I like saying some of those words, luscious creams, soothing salves. She sent me something the other day. She's got a new product. I swear to God, you've got to try this. No, nobody asked me to do this. But she sent me something called Whipped Shea Mint. It's shea butter, grapeseed oil, and essential oil of peppermint. She sent us a little jar of this stuff. Oh, my God. There's no petroleum in here, obviously. Look, if you don't buy anything from Heel and Hollers, get one of these. Whipped shea man. I'm serious. I mean, this stuff is not expensive. Just do it. Go to our website, Heelan-Hollers.com. But this new product is brand new. And it's called, Whipped Shea Mint Cream. I don't know. It's very, very, very silky soft. Just amazing stuff. Where does she live, Kathy? She lives out in Heel and Hollers. I mean, where?
I don't know, but if I put any more of that stuff on my legs, the dog won't stop licking me. So.
All right. Well, not this.
I have to stop because Rusty eats it.
Yeah, he does. He loves it. Whipped shea mint. Ah. Anyway, try it. Alice at Heel and Hollers is our first hour sponsor. Thanks, Alice. I just love some of these products. They blow me away. Absolutely blow me away. I don't know how she does it. Here we go. Garfield High School in Seattle. The students there walked out of class to protest education cuts in that state. The Washington state government proposed in a special legislative session to cut education funding as a way of closing a $2 billion budget gap. And as a result, hundreds of students from Garfield High walked out of class in protest. That's according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. The protest organizer, Mathis Watson, said in a statement to the Seattle Times, quote, "For too long, the state's budget has been balanced on the backs of students. We are the people who have been affected most by these cuts, and we are showing that we care," end quote. According to the report, students left their classes at 12:30 p.m. to begin their walk to City Hall, where they met with students from West Seattle and Nathan Hale High Schools. Then the mayor of Seattle, Mike McGann, spoke and shook hands with the students as they chanted "No more cuts." And on its website, Garfield High School addressed the possible punishments for students who left class in protest. This is what it said. To Garfield parents and guardians, announcement for November 30th. Any Garfield student who is considering being part of a student planned walkout will not have their absence excused unless they have a note written from parent or guardian. Well, that's fair enough. Hopefully the parent or the guardian will sign it. Earlier in the week, Garfield High School teacher Jesse Hagopian was arrested for protesting in the House Chamber Viewing Gallery. This is the House Chamber in Seattle. He told King 5 News, quote, "I'm outraged that our state doesn't fund education. That pushes teachers to have to take these kinds of actions to get attention to our schools and school funding," end quote. What was that famous or infamous line from, I guess it was from the 80s? It'll be a great day when schools have all the funding they need and the military have to hold bake sales to buy new destroyers or new battleships. You remember that? Anyway, to the kids in Seattle who walked out, good on you. That's what are you going to do? Just kind of be careful, though, because if Barack Obama does not veto what the Senate did the other day, the next time you walk out, you might be charged with some kind of treason or alignment with terrorists and be arrested by the military and held indefinitely. I'm exaggerating, I think. We'll be right back.
Oh,
past the hour. And speaking of high school students, a quick note here from Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. She is in Sacramento heading, she's going to do another marathon on Sunday. Anyway, a quick email here, email about her lesson with her government classes. She writes, I had my students play a game of, are you smarter than a presidential candidate today? And she writes parenthetically, this is my own game, and I had to bite my tongue to leave out the word Republican. First, I had students brainstorm what they remembered from last year's U.S. history course about industrialism, working conditions in factories, child labor, etc. Then students were treated, quote-quote, to Newt Gingrich's speech about how kids should be replacing unionized janitors. Never minding, of course, the fact that some of those janitors are parents and need the jobs. Finally, I had the kids formulate questions for Mr. Gingrich. They did a hell of a job. Here are some of them. Are you saying that we should abolish those child protection laws that are over 100 years old? What would you do for kids who get injured on the job? What about the ones who get sick later from being exposed to harsh chemicals? How are kids supposed to keep a school clean when they are supposed to be going to school? And, Kay adds, my personal favorite, you say you are a historian, so why does it seem like you don't know anything about history? I reined in my enthusiasm about the responses, but let me tell you, it is very satisfying to know that my students are absolutely smarter than this crop of Republican clowns. Kay. You can visit her site, kaysreportcard.com. And the latest madness is reported by the Washington Post. Donald Trump. Jesus, I mean, he's another one. I just wish he would get on the bandwagon to hell and disappear, this guy. You know what I'm saying? Donald Trump will moderate a Republican presidential debate sponsored by the conservative bat crap crazy website Newsmax in Des Moines, Iowa on December 27th. Newsmax. Have you ever gone there? Oh, MFG. Oh, my God. You need to treat yourself. Seriously, I'm giving them publicity. I don't care. These right-wing crazy people give me publicity, too. RedState.com and the rest of these freaks. But if you really want to have a knee-slapping good time and see how goddamn loony these people are, I mean, just absolute howl at the moon, gnaw on your own foot crazy, go to Newsmax and read some of the comments from these blubbery, armchair warrior, self-important, I'm gonna kick your ass types who just, I don't know. So anyway, they're going to sponsor a presidential debate, and Donald Trump is going to host it. Newsmax, I love this, Newsmax executive creepoid named Steve said, we approached Donald Trump. He is a well-known and vocal conservative, and we thought it was a great partnership. The debate will air on Ion Television. Ion Television. That's a network of 60 stations, so I'll bet that's a real screamer. There's no word yet on which candidates, if any, have agreed to participate. Steve over at Newsmax says they have received positive responses from multiple candidates, but will not release the full list until next week. Oh, yeah, because all both of them who responded, Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann, right? It's also not clear whether having Trump as the debate's moderator, which ensures another circus-like clown show, which is great. Do it. Whether or not that'll keep some of the top-tier candidates away, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. But that would be great fun, wouldn't it? On Newsmax, you know, with that sewer. And then Trump could get out there, and Trump being Trump, when three candidates show up, he could say, I've decided to re-announce for the presidency. God. Ah. Newsmax, these Republican clowns and Donald Trump. Now, there is a marriage made in the moist bowels of hell, don't you think? Wouldn't it be fun? I wouldn't miss that for all the chi and tina. I just don't think I can get ion television. What the hell is ion television? Oh, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? All right, we have miles to go before we sleep when we come back from... Oh, by the way, Ginger C. White, the name of Herman Cain's 13-year paramour. The name is an anagram of Newt Gingrich. We'll be right back.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
That you can live by. And so become yourself.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Alice in Arkansas down at Helen-Hollers.com. Helen Hollers, you know who she is. Here's her message. I think this is a commercial sponsorship, although I don't know because her stuff is so damn good. No thundering crowds, no police or private security, no tasers or pepper spray, just a peaceful moment online at Helen-Hollers.com for luscious creams, fragrant essential oils, and soothing salves and lip balms for your personal and holiday needs. Alice at Helen Hollers. Check out her site. Even if you don't buy anything, for God's sake, go there. It's you can't go there and not buy something. Trust me, we found that out the hard way. Well, actually, Alice sends us a lot of stuff for free. Well, not a lot, but just enough. You got to try this new thing, whipped shea mint. Just try it. If you don't like it, you can spread it on a piece of toast and have it for breakfast. Where are we? Oh, yeah. In case you missed the news, you know, the other day, the U.S. Opened fire on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan and killed 24 Pakistani soldiers who were all in, you know, all in uniform, blah, blah, blah. And General Ashfaq, careful, Kayani, Pakistan's army chief of staff, issued an order to his country's troops that they should now return fire if they come under attack again from U.S.-led coalition forces. So here we go again. You know, the Pakistanis, we have no business being there. I read something very good in New York Times today, a piece... I mean, good in the sense of this geopolitical horse crap that and death and destruction. I don't mean logical or rational. I just mean good in the context of the madness. But it's asking the Russians to help us get out of Afghanistan. You know, but we're going to wind up in a hot war with Pakistan. You know that as well as I do, right? Huh? You know that. Of course, if that happens, the Indians will seize the opportunity to once and for all get rid of their mortal enemy, Pakistan. And there we go. Nuclear. Boom. And then that great big-ass mushroom cloud. Several of them. Yeah, and war games. That was one of the strategies. Indo-Pakistan collision that would set off global thermonuclear war. Wait a minute. Prairie 2 said there is no such thing as thermonuclear war. It would all be nuclear. Okay. I think he said that. Don't write to me, Bruce, if you didn't say that. Okay, go ahead. Kayani, General Ashfaq. Be careful. General Ashfaq Kayani, Pakistan's Army Chief of Staff, said, quote, I want to emphasize and leave no ambiguity in the rules of engagement for everyone down the chain of command. When under attack, you have full liberty of action to respond with all capabilities at your disposal. This will require no clearance at any level. Then he added, I have very clearly directed that any act of aggression will be responded with full force, regardless of the cost and consequences. Ow! Well, how about that? General Ashfaq. Careful. Has decided that the U.S. military has killed enough of the Pakistan forces without some kind of response. Pakistan armed forces and Pakistan civilians and Pakistan children, and we just drench their borderlands with the blood of innocents. Because after all, you know, we're fighting a war on terror. Yeah, that's why we have to go over there and kill children. Yeah. We're fighting a war on terror, and that means that certain children are just going to die. And that's, you know, if it's children in Pakistan, I guess it doesn't matter, does it? Just like the children in Iraq, it didn't matter. Jesus, God. Thank goodness there is no such thing as a just God. Or, you know, real, honest to goodness, karma, karmic balance in a spiritual sense. Thank goodness. Because if there were, I don't think there's an American citizen alive who would not be held responsible by the invisible whip for what has been done in the name of, you know what they always tell us? They're fighting for Americans' freedoms, right? That's what they tell us. That's not true, but that's what's being told, and that's what the American public, that's what we buy into, those of us who continue to walk around inside the Matrix. But it's not true. So it's just a real good thing that whatever spiritual realm exists is not interested in goodness, badness, balance, karma, whatever. That the spiritual realm is just the spiritual realm. If it were anything beyond that, if the Christians really had a place that they called heaven and hell, where rewards and punishments were doled out like, you know, so many food stamps, then, well, if you want to know more about this, just go read Mark Twain's Letters to the Earth, or read Mark Twain's The War Prayer. Any of the writings that he had about religion, just do a Google, Mark Twain religion, and you'll come across some amazing stuff. So anyway, I digress. Pakistan's top military commander, General Ashfaq. Be careful there. Ashfaq. okay. Kayani said, fire back. Shoot back. Here's your permission. You don't need to work up the chain of command. When the Amerikanskis attack you, open fire. With anything at your disposal. Woo. From Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, fair.org, great website. There was, the New York Times reported, I think it was last week, about this international conference, an effort to ban cluster bombs. And you know what cluster bombs are. Those are, I think most of them are spherical, and when they fall, They explode into hundreds of little bomblets, some of which go off, some of which don't. If you are in the general vicinity of a cluster bomb, you become the human flesh equivalent of shredded wheat. If not all of the cluster bombs go off, which is usually the case, then they just lie there. And they have a rather attractive appearance, is my understanding. Some of them are painted bright yellow. And they tend to attract children. Children that come out and pick them up, and then the child becomes like shredded wheat. This is just the nature of war. I mean, you know, war is hell, right? We have to drop cluster bombs, apparently. Now we don't fight cluster bombs. I think specifically were developed to drop into massed troop. Massed troop, like a charge of troops, and it would shred an awful lot of people when they went off. But that's not the kind of war we're fighting. I mean, it's targeted assassinations now. You know, we send out the drones, we find the people, and we blow the back of their heads wide open. And if they're Americans, So why the need to keep cluster bombs? I mean, cluster bombs are one of the more vile non-nuclear weapons ever developed. I mean, it took a real patriot, I guess is the right word, to come up with something called a cluster bomb, something that shreds human flesh. So anyway, there was a conference in Geneva last week to come up with an international treaty that would either restrict or ban the use of cluster munitions. What does that mean, I wonder? Restrict the use. Where can you use them? We can use them here, but not there. And the New York Times, which I use as a source quite frequently, especially some of their op-ed pieces, like Paul Krugman and people like that. But in their news reporting section, I want to share with you how this was reported, and then how the Reuters news agency reported the same story. Stay with us.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Alice in Arkansas down at Helen-Hollers.com, Helen Hollers. She has a message, no thundering crowds, no police or private security, no tasers or pepper spray, just a peaceful moment online at Helen-Hollers.com. For luscious creams, fragrant essential oils, and soothing salves and lip balms for your personal and holiday needs. So do that. She's one of our most loyal supporters of this program. Go to her website, and when you order something, I'm telling you, try this whipped shea mint. Whew. Okay. From last Saturday's New York Times, Dateline Geneva. Despite last-minute attempts to broker a compromise, American-led efforts to conclude an international treaty restricting use of cluster munitions collapsed on Friday in the face of opposition from countries that said it did not address their humanitarian concerns and would undermine existing international law. Now, when you first read that, if you're like me, you scan through it, a couple of things leap out last minute. American-led efforts, international treaty. Mm-hmm. Now, according to FAIR.org, this American-led effort, so-called, readers were told, reflected the increasing stigmatization of a weapon recognized as causing unacceptable harm to civilians and seen as having lasting effects on development for decades after conflicts have ended. End quote. Okay, well, who opposes such efforts? The Times says, despite last-minute attempts, American efforts to conclude were opposed, fell apart. Who opposes such efforts? It takes a little while to understand that the other side is taking a much tougher stance to eliminate cluster bombs, as outlined at a conference in Oslo, Norway in 2008. The article went on from the Times, but countries and disarmament groups opposing the draft treaty said the humanitarian impact of the proposed protocol would be minimal and would legitimize continued use of other cluster munitions that are recognized to cause unacceptable harm. These countries, together with the International Committee of the Red Cross and United Nations agencies dealing with development and human rights, also argued that the adoption of a legal instrument that was weaker than the Oslo Agreement would set a dangerous precedent. That's the New York Times. Now, as FAIR points out, the Times' confused account is in stark contrast to other reporting. This little Reuters sentence, for example, does a much better job of explaining things in the lead, in the first sentence. This is what Reuters said. A U.S.-led push to regulate rather than ban cluster munitions failed Friday after 50 countries objected following humanitarian campaigners' claims that anything less than an outright ban would be an unprecedented reversal of human rights law. That's it. Now, you don't have any problem with that sentence, do you? But the five or six or seven sentences that I shared with you from the New York Times, did you have a problem understanding that? That's just like the confusion that I felt in the past several days as the Senate passed this military act that says American citizens now can be arrested and held indefinitely by the U.S. military on any charge, as a matter of fact, on no charge. And you know, we've gone back and forth. Well, does it say American? No, it doesn't say. Yes, it does. No, American. Where? The confusion is deliberate. And the confusion by the New York Times in reporting the story, you know, any story that can be said in 20 words should not require 100. It's very simple. So, at FAIR.org, Peter Hart, reporting on this, writes, something tells me the Times story would look a little differently if the United States weren't on the pro-cluster bomb side of this argument. That's right. If we were truly anti-cluster bombs, the Times wouldn't mince words. The Times would just come out and say efforts by the United States to ban cluster bombs was defeated. But we're not on the side of banning cluster bombs. Never have been. We are on the side of regulating, even though I think every or any eighth grader who wants to take a look at it understands that once a war starts, once a shooting war, a hot war starts, there's no, well, what? Oh, wait a minute. We can't drop cluster bombs. Why not? Well, we agreed not to. Yeah, but we're at war. Yeah, but this is, you know, we have rules of war. What about white phosphorus? Oh, what about depleted uranium? Okay, if you're going to confuse the issue, go ahead, but, you know, war is hell. So this is where we're at. You know, the peace-loving United States of America, the great defenders of truth, justice, and the American way, all the lovely children that have been shredded, all the civilians, you know, goat herders, poppy growers, who happen to get close to an unexploded little tiny piece of ordnance that then goes off and shreds their legs or the lower half of their body, and they have a chance to look at that as they die. And we continue to insist that our national security state produce these things and continue to drop them. The thing about cluster bombs, it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, no matter until they, until they deteriorate from weather and dirt and mud and they just, I don't know, how do they break down? But they're always there until they explode. So, you know, once again, now, you know, everybody else in the world understand, you know, you go to these conventions in Geneva. I've never attended one, but I would assume you go to one and there are people there who know full well that it's the United States that produces most of them and refuses to ban them. Oh, well, never mind. We'll be back after the break. This is the Malloy Program. And this hour is sponsored by Chris Hovey. And Chris's message, visit keepworthy.com. Keepworthy.com. For fine children's books and keepsake gifts that teach life lessons. Read about the reindeer who has to wear eyeglasses in Randall's Christmas Vision, for example. All right, so the message from Chris, visit this website, keepworthy.com. Just like it sounds, keepworthy.com for children's books and keepsake gifts. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the sponsorship. I have in front of me an advanced copy of what Herman Cain is going to say tomorrow when he addresses the American public after talking to his wife. Oh, Jesus. Oh, this man is stupid. But anyway, here it is. It says here, dear friend, and when I say friend, I mean it in the normal way, not someone I've been sleeping with for 13 years, unless, of course, I've been sleeping with you for 13 years. In that case, I do mean it that way. It is with a heavy heart that I've decided to end my inspirational quest for the White House. After much reassessing and reconsidering, I have decided to spend more time being screamed at by my wife. And by more time, I mean 24 hours a day, stopping only for bathroom breaks. But before I go, let me share with you my final thoughts on my campaign. After months of crisscrossing this great land of ours and participating in over 300 televised debates, I am being disqualified because of an extramarital affair. And that raises the following question. Are you effing kidding me? I mean, let's get real. I never heard of Libya. I don't know whether that CNN dude's name was Wolf or Blitz. And my only training for running the number one nation in the world was running its number eight pizza chain. Yet none of that, I repeat, none of that disqualified me. In fact, I was the front effing runner. As long as I kept my 999 in my pants. I have no idea what I mean by that. I just like saying 999. But here's the part that really kills me. You're kicking me to the curb because I was messing around, and instead you're going with Newt Gingrich? I repeat, are you effing kidding me? Oh, I know what you're saying. You love Newt because he's an intellectual. Well, Newt Gingrich is the intellectual of the Republican field, the way Mo was the intellectual of the Stooges. And that leads me to my final point. You disgust me, America. Right now, if I had my way, I'd up and move to another country. I really, truly would. Only I don't know where any of them are. And my wife won't let me leave the house. Goodbye forever. Herman. Wow. Oh, you can get your own copy of this at the Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz. Just go to borowitzreport.us. And there it is. Borowitz Report. That guy's a damn genius. I swear he is. Herman Cain. Jesus God. So there's his statement. It'll be released tomorrow, and I don't know when tomorrow. We're going to be raking leaves and stuff, but if we, you know, if we hear it, if we hear it on NPR, you know, we'll drop the rakes and listen. BorowitzReport.us. What else is here? Oh, yeah. Again, Peter Hart at FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR.org. If you paid attention to the presidential campaign season, other than to see it as ridiculous comedy like I have, but you've no doubt been entertained by the string of embarrassments and gaffes. Rick Perry doesn't know how old you have to be to vote. Herman Cain doesn't know anything about Libya. Mitt Romney talks about the upside of a murdering dictatorship. Wait, what? The upside of a murderous dictatorship? Well, in the November 22nd debate, Romney gave this answer to a question about what to do about Pakistan. This is what he said. We don't want to just pull up stakes and get out of town after the enormous output we've just made for the region. Look at Indonesia in the 60s. We helped them move toward modernity. We need to help bring Pakistan into the 21st century, or the 20th for that matter. End quote. Now, that's an astonishing comment, and one that nobody in the mainstream corporate capitalist media paid any attention to. To people who were paying attention, though, Romney, when he talks about look at what we did with Indonesia in the 60s, he was referring to the reign of the Indonesian dictator Suharto, who took power in the mid-60s. And as Ed Herman wrote in Extra a number of years ago, quote, Suharto's overthrow of the Sukarno government in 1965-66 turned Indonesia from Cold War neutralism to fervent anti-communism and wiped out the Indonesian Communist Party, exterminating a sizable part of its mass base in the process, in widespread massacres that claimed at least 500,000 and perhaps more than a million victims. The U.S. establishment's enthusiasm for this coup cum mass murder was ecstatic. New York Times columnist C.L. Sulzberger said at the time, quote, almost everyone is pleased by the changes being wrought, end quote. And Extra went on several years ago and said, Suharto quickly transformed Indonesia into an investor's paradise, only slightly qualified by the steep bribery charge for entry into this. Investors flocked in to exploit the timber, mineral, and oil resources, as well as the cheap repressed labor, often in joint ventures with Suharto family members and cronies. Investor enthusiasm for this favorable climate of investment was expressed in political support and even in public advertisements. For example, a full page ad in the New York Times in September 1992 by Chevron and Texaco entitled "Indonesia, a model for economic development." Slaughtering up to 1 million people in Indonesia. And yet Romney, well, the progressives, Matt Rothschild, called Romney's answer, quote, "the most outrageous comment of the whole debate," end quote, noting that the new leadership he referred to was a dictator who killed between 500,000 and 1 million of his own citizens with the help of the CIA. And a little follow-up from Wolf Blitzer during that debate would have been nice, you know? One of the only other journalists to catch this was Dan Murphy of the Christian Science Monitor, who spent a decade reporting from Indonesia. And as Murphy wrote, the 1960s saw, quote, "the systematic destruction of Indonesia's nascent democratic institutions and political parties, state repression of opponents with torture, targeted killings, long jail terms, and a military-backed dictatorship that persisted until a popular uprising in 1998 finally pushed Suharto from power." Well, Mitt Romney, as has been said, hundreds of journalists who spend every day writing about U.S. politics apparently didn't find it newsworthy to note that Romney endorsed a murderous, bloody dictatorship. The hour. All right, after the next break, we're going to do some podcast trivia. So if you want to participate, win a 1-year subscription to Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free, then call in now, 877-996-2556. And we will play this crazy game after the next break. From Prairie 2, Bruce Enberg, who explains to us what the economic news was today. I was just thrilled to see that unemployment had fallen by a full half a percentage point. Prairie 2 writes, the good news and the bad. Initial jobless claims went back up over the magic 400,000 mark last week. That indicates no job growth. But today's employer survey showed the private sector hired 140,000 workers in November. But Republicans eliminated 20,000 government jobs, so there's a net gain of 120,000 jobs. The unemployment rate surprisingly fell to 8.6% from 9% as determined by household phone surveys. The Republicans are unhappy with this news and cling to the workforce participation rate, which stands at 64%, as proof of Obama's failure. This number isn't as bad as it sounds, but it has been trending down. There were 315,000 people who left the workforce altogether last quarter. Conservatives conveniently misspeak and say those people left last month. It was last quarter. The number of jobs created was revised up for the months of September and October, showing a total of 278,000 jobs added for the third quarter. Unfortunately, this is less than needed to absorb the population growth. There is, however, something strange about another more obscure labor survey the government does. It's called the Adjusted Household Survey of Employment. And it actually asks people if they're working. in contrast to the employer survey that is widely reported in the media. Historically, the two surveys track pretty closely, but over the past year, the two graphs have been diverging. Last month, it went nuts. The difference was almost 500,000 jobs to the positive, with an overall total of 2.5 million new jobs created this year, compared to the official number of 1.6 million jobs created. If the grain got lost in all that chaff, the kernel is this: 500,000 new jobs in 1 month. If there isn't something wrong with the survey, they've been doing this for decades, so it should work, things are really picking up. But not with the big job creators that heavily weight the employer survey. That survey did place half of the new growth with small business. But they tend to completely miss certain types of small businesses, as well as startup companies and people who create their own job. This would explain the general improvement in the economic numbers that we have been seeing despite the continued high unemployment rate and that rate's sudden drop last month. It's not time to start singing happy days are here again for a number of reasons. For one thing, we need to see this improvement sustained over time. And contrary to the conservative talking point that says a job is a job, take what we give you or we'll let you starve, that is not how an economy recovers, nor does it produce the American dream. A long-term study of the unemployed by Rutgers University has been following people who lost their jobs in the first year of the Bush Great Depression. Only 7% have found a comparable job that allowed them to escape relatively unharmed. A third are in varying degrees of poverty, having had their lives totally wrecked by their job loss, and 21% see this change as permanent. The middle third see themselves recovering, at least so far. Nationwide, 25% of all full-time workers make wages that keep them below the poverty rate. Companies like Walmart can't operate without government programs to support the bulk of their workers. Food stamps, Medicaid, housing assistance, as well as food banks, and support from workers' families keep Walmart in business. As red states continue to cut programs and drive down wages, the pressure builds for a shift to a Mexico-style economy, or simply a not-quite-failed state existence. Don't kid yourself, right-winger. The Republicans have economies that explain these things to them. They have economists who explain these things to them. They just don't care. We need to care for ourselves. We're the 99%. Prairie2.com. Well, I'm glad he explained that to me. All right, the number is 877-996-2556. We're going to take a break. When we come back, if you're online, we'll give you a chance to win a one-year podcast subscription free to the Malloy program, commercial free, filled with all sorts of fun and frivolity. 877-996-2556. We'll be right back. So hard to your possessions, for you have nothing, you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended, unless enjoyed by one and all. It's time once again, True Seekers, for podcast trivia. Oh. Where, with the simple act of answering a question correctly, and it is multiple choice, you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Program podcast downloads, commercial-free, delivered to your mailbox, or your cell phone, or your wristwatch, or your earbud, wherever, every morning. All you have to do is answer the question right. All right, Johnny, who is first? Well, Mike, we have David in Baltimore. Hello, David.
Hello, Mike.
All right, you ready to give this a shot?
I will, sir.
All right, here we go. The Senate this week voted 93-7 in favor of what? A, in support of the House providing funding for a massive public works program that will put millions of people back to work and provide funding for thousands of small businesses. B, asking the House to defund the Defense Department except for the maintenance of U.S. nuclear weapons, and thereby finally ending the stranglehold the military-industrial complex has held in this country for the past 80 years, or 60 years. C, a resolution asking that the effective income tax rate on the upper 1% be raised, and in doing so, finally saying we all have to contribute to saving this economy. Or D, did the Senate pass a law that says the U.S. military can now be used as a police command with the power to arrest, detain indefinitely, and deny constitutional rights to American citizens?
D, those 30 rat
bastards. D, you got it. You know, when we were writing these questions, David, you know, as I wrote them, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be something if the Senate would have passed a resolution in support of the House providing funding for a massive public works program? Wouldn't it have been nice if the Senate had passed a resolution asking the House to defund the Defense Department, except for, you know, maintaining the U.S. nuclear arsenal? Wouldn't it have been nice if they would have passed a resolution asking that the income, I think that comes from the House also, that the income tax rate on the upper 1% be increased? But no. They passed a bill, it goes back to the House now for a conference, and Obama has promised he would veto it. But of all the possible things the U.S. Senate could have done this week, they passed a law that says the U.S. military now can arrest us and hold us indefinitely with no charges, no right to a lawyer, no constitutional protections. Let me ask you something, David. Where the hell do we live?
I have no idea, Mike. I am so disgusted that I find it hard to get up every day. I look at my two children, and I don't know what type of country they are going to grow up in. And I worry about that.
Yeah, I think the same thing. You know, all my kids are grown except one, and she's only 7 and a half. And I really do get concerned about that. All right. Before we, don't hang up, because when we're finished the call here, I'll put you on hold and Kathy will get the information.
Mike,
you wanted to make a comment. Yeah.
I also wanted to thank you, sir. You, before you went on your vacation, you gave an excellent, description of racism.
I forget. Oh, no. David, we lost you. He'll come back. Now, that was his phone. That had to have been David's phone. Come on, Dave, call back in. go. Hurry, David. We'll get him back. Do. I'll tell you what, while we're waiting for David to call back in, I hope he does. Come on. You've got this 1 year subscription. He must have maybe got into a bad cell. Maybe his cell phone battery wore out. We'll find out. We'll find out momentarily. All right, let's just wait, see if Dave will call back. And regarding that answer to the trivia question, this bill that was passed by the Senate, I mean, it's pretty astonishing to me when you consider that, you know, we talked about this the other day. The members of the Senate, even a self-described liberal like Patty Murray from, she's the state of Washington, right? She voted in favor of preventive indeterminate detention. Even Patty Murray. So, as Bob Alexander points out, looks like Barack Obama is our last hope. Now, here are the ones who voted against this. There's only seven of them. Merkley, a Democrat from Oregon. Wyden, Democrat from Oregon. Harkin, Democrat from Iowa. Paul, Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. Lee, Republican of Utah. Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma. And, of course, Bernie Sanders, Independent of Vermont. Three Democrats, three Republicans, and Bernie Sanders. And as Bob Alexander points out, all the rest are America-hating, Constitution-shredding swine. And then Bob quotes Martin Luther King Jr., the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. And that attitude, as Bob Alexander points out today, roams the globe free and unfettered to go get anybody they want. So, Barack Obama, it's really up to you to veto this. We'll see what happens, won't we, to his seekers. Aaron is in Minneapolis. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's going.
All right.
Yeah.
I would like to play trivia, but that's what I was on the line for. I didn't have any other particular comment.
Oh.
Other than hi. Yeah, that's what I was told. But we can chat if you want, you know.
well, how's the weather, Aaron?
Oh, it's awful. It's just awful.
No, bad weather.
I wish I were in Georgia. I was in Georgia for the first time this year, and I absolutely loved it. So.
Yeah, we've had some really great weather. How's the wife and kids?
You know, unlike Dave, I have a girlfriend. I don't have a wife or kids, and I'm actually kind of thankful for that right now, just given the circumstances in our country.
Well,
because I don't feel like I have so much to lose, you know?
How's the girlfriend? She doing all right?
Yeah, she's great.
Good.
I was hoping to win a podcast year subscription for her. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll be doing this again next Friday. So
okay. Well, I'll tell you what, man. I've been listening to you for 8, 9, 10 years.
Good Lord.
So I'm not going to stop. So well, I'll call back. You'll hear from me again, I promise.
All right. Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, you got it, man. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Take care. Oh, wait. I forgot to ask about his dog. Ours is doing fine. Aaron! Oh, that's right. No, I love chatting. That's great. Thanks, Aaron. John Cleveland, Mike, just happened to be reading The New Rulers of the World by John Pilger on page 101, this. Quote, the more common form of cluster bombs, known in the U.S. as rock eyes, were tested in neighboring Laos during the Vietnam War. They exploded into 160 canisters or bomblets, half of which lay on the ground until an animal or person stepped on them or picked them up, as children often did. Then they exploded. 30 years later, they continue to kill and maim 20,000 people a year in Laos, a tiny country never at war with the U.S., which was bombed as a sideshow to the destruction of Vietnam and Cambodia. With their lethal longevity, cluster bombs are designed purely for terror, as an anti-personnel weapon, to use the military term. End quote. And yet, Joe writes, we are frequently regaled about the unprecedented horror of 9/11 and the Ground Zero Mosque. Joe in Cleveland. Yeah, I hear you, Joe. 20,000 people a year in Laos are either wounded or killed by cluster bombs that we dropped 40 years ago. Wow. Okay. Somebody wrote here, did Denis Kucinich vote, this is from Paz, in Australia, did Denis Kucinich vote in favor of the bill? If so, why? What happened to him? No, this was a Senate vote, Paz. Denis Kucinich, of course, is in the House. This was a Senate vote that I've been talking about, the Military Detention Act. So Kucinich hasn't, he would never vote for something like that, for sure. We'll be right back.
Sense and to rearrange.
For the hour. Oh, and this hour is being sponsored by Chris Hovey. His message, visit the website keepworthy.com for fine children's books and keepsake gifts that teach life lessons. Read about the reindeer who has to wear eyeglasses in Randall's Christmas vision, for example. So check it out, keepworthy.com, keepworthy.com. Thanks, Chris. Couple emails here. This is from Cliff. Mike, earlier you mentioned that George W. Bush should be arrested for war crimes, which of course is true, but you indicated that some of both German and Japan's high command were executed after World War II. Fortunately, the industrialized countries have moved forward and have done away with the death penalty. Oh, wait, I think there may be one industrialized country that has retained the death penalty. Signed, Cliff. P.S. I think George W. Bush's father and grandfathers should have been charged with treason. Just a thought. Yeah. And regarding the cluster bombs, Alex in New York City. Hi, Mike. I like to double-check things when I hear them somewhere before I relay them to, well, everyone. And it turns out that the Laos figure is way wrong. It's about 100 killed or maimed a year by cluster bombs, but 50,000 total since 1964, or 20,000 since the war ended. By no means more cheerful, but 20,000 a year would be genocide. Thanks for the heads up. Another statistic juju for the bat belt I use in fighting the indifferent default left as well as the right. Alex in NYC. Yeah, the 20,000 did seem pretty high, but, you know, John Pilger is pretty much, is he not, an authority? Let me just check here. All right, here's the difference, Alex. It doesn't say 20,000. I thought I made this clear, not 20,000 killed. 30 years later, these bombs continue to kill and maim 20,000 people a year in Laos. So if it's 1,000, if it's 500 people who are killed and 19,500 who are wounded, injured, harmed, hurt. So Bilger does have a not a deceptive qualifier there, but a truthful statement. I have no way of knowing if it's truthful, but like I say, John Pilger, pretty much like Chris Hedges or Noam Chomsky or, you know, other writers of that caliber, I would pretty much accept what they say at face value. Unless it was something demonstrably incorrect. So I think what Pilger is saying He's talking about the cluster bombs. They often exploded. 30 years later, they continue to kill and maim 20,000 people a year in Laos. So the maim part, as gruesome as all that is, has to factor in, right? I don't know. It just gets crazier and crazier, doesn't it? We have a break coming up here momentarily, but we'll be back for more of your phone calls if you'd like to stick around. Anyway, again, this hour was sponsored by Chris Hovey. And his message is to ask you to visit the website keepworthy.com. It's a children's books and keepsake gift. It's a publishing company. So check it out, keepworthy.com. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Searching deep down in my soul. Words that I'm hearing are starting to get old. Feels like I'm starting all over again. The last 3 years were just pretend. And I said goodbye to you. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Alex in New York sent me the fact sheet from Legacies of War, the cluster bomb fact sheet. This is like, you know, just some horrible, grotesque, face pops up in your nightmare from something that happened to you a long time ago. We're talking about what we did in Laos. You may not want to hear this, but here it is. From 1964 to 1973, the U.S. dropped over 2 million tons of ordnance over Laos in 580,000 bombing missions. That's the equivalent of one plane load of ordnance every 8 minutes, 24 hours a day, for 9 years. At least 270 million cluster bomblets were dropped as part of the bombing campaign. Approximately 80 million failed to detonate. Data from a new survey completed in Laos in 2009 indicate that UXO, unexploded ordnance, primarily cluster bombs, have killed or maimed as many as 50,000 civilians in Laos since 1964 and 20,000 since 1974 after the war ended. Over the past 2 years, there have been over 100 new casualties each year. About 40% of the accidents result in death, and 40% of the victims are children. Boys are particularly at risk. Laos has suffered more than half of the confirmed cluster munitions casualties in the entire world. At least one-third of Laos is contaminated with unexploded ordnance based on surveys and U.S. military strike data. Man, what did I say earlier tonight about you better hope that there's no such thing as karma, spiritual balance, or this Christian hell that has been constructed, or any hell that's been constructed by people who want to convince you that if you don't believe their way, you're going to burn and roast and fry forever. Man. This hour also is sponsored by Chris Hovey and Keepworthy Books, keepworthy.com. I might mention that this publishing company, this is a little small business, a man and a woman. She writes, he illustrates. Is that what it is, Kathy? They sent us two of these books for Molly. Granted, Molly was a little bit advanced in her reading. I'm just saying. But she, as soon as she got the books, she read both of them immediately in the car. So, and she really liked them. It wasn't computing here at first when keepworthy.com. But I definitely recommend these books. Just like Heal and Hollers, you know, when you get a good product that has the support to advertise on your program, and then when you try the product, as we have, and it's exactly as the producer says it is, what are you going to do? That's why I talk so much about Heal and Hollers. But I can tell you that keepworthy.com for children's books, and they have little keepsake gifts that go along with these books that are just astonishing. There's a little container for, you know, teeth. You put, you know, a kid loses a tooth and you put it in there for the tooth fairy. And it feels like it belongs in a jewelry store. I mean, it really is. Anyway, check them out, okay? I strongly recommend both our advertisers tonight. You know my feelings about Heal and Hollers. And this group also. Keepworthy.com for children's books and keepsake gifts that teach life lessons. What they do, the books use little animals to explain things. And it's cool. I liked it. A story about Molly got one about the beaver that loses his baby teeth and he learns the lessons of patience, and reindeer who has to wear eyeglasses and so on and so forth. These books are designed to make kids who deal with some of the stuff that they might get teased about. How to feel less of a target for that kind of teasing. Now, I know there's a big effort right now. God knows in Molly's school, teasing is right up there with, opening fire with an AK-47 in the hallway. I mean, they just absolutely do not allow teasing or bullying or anything of the sort. We had a very serious case here in the school system that Molly's in a couple of years ago before she got into it. Not her school, but a little boy, I think he was a third or fourth grader, who was bullied and bullied and bullied, and he finally committed suicide. He hanged himself, I think, was the way he committed suicide. Just an absolute tragedy. And the school system that Molly is in began an all-out campaign about not bullying or picking up on a kid's perceived weakness, and you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. So these books are great. Check it out, will you please? Keepworthy.com. And Chris Hovey has sponsored both hours tonight, second and third hours, with a message about these books. Check them out. Thank you. Oh my God, he's out of jail, Sanchez. So, what, did you break out or did you pay the bond?
I actually, there was a technicality here that they had to see us within 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And because of a technical snafu, they didn't get us to court on time. So they let me go.
Wait a minute, 72 hours? I've been arrested for essentially the same thing, Sanchez, and usually within 24 hours or less.
Well, yeah.
Why 72 in L.A.?
I remember that, your whole incident in Washington, D.C., and I kind of was questioning the officers, but they said no, it was 72 here in apparently L.A. County. But so I was taken over to the L.A. City courts. And we were waiting there and waiting and waiting, and finally they let everybody that was in my little group go because of this technical snafu. So quite a sizable group of Occupy LA people. There were approximately, it surprised me, man, almost 300 people that were arrested early Wednesday morning.
Yeah, it was a massive arrest. It was my understanding, and media were reporting it, mainstream were reporting actual factual figures. But I heard reports that some of you were denied access to toilets.
Yes. We were not even allowed access to telephones. I had to beg them because I have animals at home,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't being fed, and I had to literally, like, psychologically play on their guilt in order to allow me to make a call to my friend Sherelle.
I got an email from her, and she said she was on her way to your apartment to take care of those animals.
Yes, and so because of that, they allowed me to get a phone call, but none of the other Occupy LA people that were in my cell block were allowed to get out of their cells, and we were held for, like I said, over 72 hours by the time we were assigned to see the judge.
All right, hold on a second, Sanchez. Let me put you on hold. I got to do some commercials here, and we'll come back because I want to get some more information from you about your experience out there. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mississippi.
rights of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, we are talking with Sanchez, who got busted out in L.A. and is out now. So the experience in there, you know, all the goodwill that Villaraigosa tried to establish with the Occupy and the L.A. police went right to hell, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And they held a press conference the following day, and they said all the world saw what a brilliant operation it was. That was bull crap, because there were some definite civil rights violations that occurred. One person who was standing on the city hall steps, not even part of the occupation, as the police came in their riot gear, they pushed this guy, pushed his telephone down, and, like, pushed him over. It was basically... I don't want to talk too much about that because he's going to be filing a lawsuit, so I don't want to reveal too much details about that. But there were also some other civil rights violations because, as I said, people were not given access to telephones. And we were held in cells for the entire process. We were not allowed to, the general population was not allowed to make phone calls. So people that were, that knew that some people were getting arrested had access to bail bonds. Bondsmen, and they made arrangements to spring their people. But nobody actually knew that I was in there until I got a hold of my friend. But that was like roughly 36 hours afterwards.
Did I read someplace that some of the bonds were being set as high as $6,000-$7,000?
Yes, that's correct. It was a ridiculously high price because of the fact that this charge that we were all, it was a one common charge for everybody, was failure to disperse. And when the police gave us the first warning, this is, they say, this is your warning, they said in the report, for everybody to leave, and you have 5 minutes to leave. And some people, this is what happened. Generally, they blocked off two blocks of the city area, and some people were deliberately not allowed to leave. And they said, get back, and they were trying to escape in alleyways or whatever, and everything was blocked off. So everybody was forced back into the city hall area. So, again, there's clear issues here. The people's civil rights were being violated deliberately. They were not allowing people to come in or out, and this was clearly before they gave the disbursement announcement. But then when the disbursement, they said, okay, everybody now here is going to be arrested. At one point, as I was trying to tell you before, a lot of the members of Occupy LA, they're very young, some in their late teens, early 20s. This is their first, clearly it's their first experience in a demonstration protest and dealing with the police on this issue. We were trained in nonviolent training.
Right.
And it worked to a certain degree, but then people began to get emotional. The police were getting a little emotional. You could deliberately see fear in some of these people's eyes because they weren't part of the metro area. They were like outlying LAPD areas. So what I did was I found one of the commanders. I was part of what was called the nonviolent monitors. As I went down there, I was doing half press and half participation in Occupy LA. And I have conflicting things there, but that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I approached one of the commanders. I said, my name is Sanchez. I'm with Occupy LA, one of the nonviolent, it said it on my shirt, clearly. I said, please, many of these people, I'm like a father to these people. You know, I'm 54 years old. I just say that to make everyone aware of my age. And these people are young, they've never been through this before, and clearly some people are agitated. Please give me a few minutes to calm them down and to also give you a chance to also calm down, because clearly your officers are highly agitated as well. So he allowed me, because I said, I feel like a father to these people. So he said, okay, go ahead. And so I made a circle as everybody was circled and seated in the General Assembly area, and I made a circle to, like, calm, and I kept saying chill, not only to our members, but to the police officers. And at one point, that commander kind of very casually walked by me as I was making the circles and trying to chill everybody down and to control the scene. And it worked. It was working. And then the commander walked by very casually. He says, and I got a nickname from the LAPD. My new nickname is this commander walked by me. He says, "Nice going, Father Wisdom."
Father.
And I'm keeping that's a keeper. So you can call me Father Wisdom if you want.
Father Wisdom. No, I think I'll pass on that with Sanchez. But,
okay. But, I like it, though. I'm keeping it.
No, I know what you're saying here. I think there was a breakdown there among the older Occupy people. When you do have young people, they have to be taught. If you're going to do nonviolent civil disobedience, there is a way to do it that makes it effective.
Yes.
And that stops, unless the cops go crazy, stops people from getting their heads cracked open and pepper spray thrown in their face.
Well, they denied the press access. The general press was escorted out, and they only had one camera pool, photographers, and even the helicopters were shooed away at that point.
Yeah. So hey, hold on again, Sanchez. I want to hold you over one more break, and we'll talk a little bit more about Occupy LA, and Sanchez is out of jail. Father Wisdom. Okay, we'll be right back.
Doing talk radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Excuse me. This hour is sponsored by Chris Hovey, and he wants you to visit keepworthy.com. That's a website for fine children's books and keepsake gifts that teach life lessons. Read about the beaver that loses his baby teeth and learns the lessons of patience. Well, how'd you like to try to bite through a tree, with no teeth? I've seen these kids' books, and so has my 7-year-old, and they're good. It's two people, I believe the whole company is two people, the writer and the illustrator. And this is like, I think this operation is a year old, if that. It's brand new. So check them out. There's also little keepsake gifts for the kids that correspond with the books. And this is not electronic anything. This is an actual book that you hold in your hand, the child does. And reads. Not that there's anything wrong with e-readers. Don't jump up and say, "Oh, what the hell?" But seriously, check out this website, keepworthy.com. They don't have a lot of stuff there. It's kind of limited right now, but they're just starting. So check it out, keepworthy.com. Okay? All right, Father Wisdom, where were we?
Yeah, I was trying to describe the area once the raid had begun. It was a controlled press. It was only one pool camera. I'm assuming that they picked Fox News. One photographer, again, I don't know where the photographer came from. And that was it. That was the only media that was allowed. So when Villaraigosa and the chief of police of L.A., were holding their press conference the following day, of course they said, "Oh, all the world saw a very non-violent..." Well, of course, at that point, none of the independent or alternative media that they didn't want to risk getting arrested, they were forced to leave. Apparently, one or two of the alternative media were arrested because they did not have enough time to get out, or they didn't have the proper press credentials, and so they wound up getting arrested. And one reason why the number was so high, the original number was of Occupy LA people, official Occupy protesters, was approximately 180 to 190 people. But then when you figured in all the people that were not allowed to leave the area with an adequate amount of time, and that includes innocent people that were walking in the streets that didn't know what was going on one block over, they were arrested as well. So that's why the number shot up to, like, close to 300. That included, like, innocent bystanders that had no idea what was going on. And I shared the block with a few of those people in the bus ride over to the jailhouse.
Good
and heard their
God.
Story.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the terrible aspects of living in a police state. When the time comes, the people who have nothing to do, of course, with the demonstration, of course, this might there might be a lesson in there for people. I don't know.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the what they did in New York, what the police did in New York, and apparently Bloomberg is out of his mind. You know, I thought the guy was fairly rational, but it looks like the mayor of New York is he's referring to the New York Police Department as his private army now. I don't know if he's being funny or attempting to be funny. I have no idea, but I think it's clear to anyone who wants to pay attention to how moving Occupy people out of the areas that they have occupied that this was carefully coordinated, and it was not coordinated by a bunch of chiefs of police. They don't think think in terms of strategic thinking. They think in tactical terms. And the strategic thinking has to come from an agency like the Department of Homeland Security or the FBI or whoever it is. And the bottom line here, I think people who are going to participate in ongoing civil disobedience have got to understand two essential things, first of all. And the first one is how to participate in civil disobedience. If you start to freak, and I'm not saying you're not going to get gassed or you're not going to be hurt, but if you start to freak out before anything like that happens, it almost incites ill-trained police officers. Like
exactly.
You said, they brought them in from the suburbs.
Yep.
They don't know what to do either. So there has got to be training. That's A. B is to understand that reaction to civil disobedience now is taking on a national aspect. It is not just to LAPD or the Atlanta PD or the New York PD. It is now a coordinated action against people who are peacefully demonstrating. So this, you know, it's turned a corner, I think, and it's gotten into that police state tactic area, Sanchez, that is really, really speaks volumes of the contempt that people have in authority now for the constitutional right to peacefully assemble. You know what the Senate just passed yesterday? This goes back to the House Conference Committee now, where people can be arrested and detained by the military, held without charge indefinitely. I mean, Jesus God. So it's really, there has been a massive change in attitude here. And I think anyone who's going to participate in these demonstrations and this resistance has got to understand what they're up against.
Well, it's a fully coordinated effort between, I think, 18 major cities across the entire United States. And not only was Los Angeles, L.A., Occupy raided, but at the very same time, one of the cities in, I think it was Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, was also being raided. It was coordinated well in advance. This was a well-planned effort. And again, like I say, it was controlled. They controlled the media. They controlled everything. It was Homeland Security, like you said, FBI, in coordination with the LAPD. That it was a well-executed, as far as in their press conference, Chief Beck was saying the following day, the world saw that how well executed this thing was. Well, of course, because they're not showing to the other side,
right,
and they shoot away the alternative media before they have the cameras to report on any of this stuff.
Right.
So it's going to be very, very difficult, but we have to, understand that with this Occupy movement, how long has this Occupy thing? Occupy Wall Street started, September?
Mm-hmm.
But look to Gandhi's with LA Occupy. the Gandhi's expression of first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you.
Then you
and
win.
They're going to fight us. They're going to fight us tooth and nail, and we're fighting back. Mm. We are emboldened because of the fact that so many of our Occupy LA members were willing to be arrested for this cause. And so many other people, including the L.A. Police Department themselves, the individual members that came to us and whispered, yeah, we're backing you. We understand. And I'm going to do some research on something that somebody told me. He was an ex-employee of one of the elected officials of the city of Los Angeles who was telling me where he knows where all the bodies are buried. Mm-hmm. I have to do some research, and I can't tell you any more tonight about that.
All right. Listen, Sanchez, I've got a couple more people who want to comment on this. So let me just say I'm glad you're out.
Thank you.
I think this idea of helping younger people who have not been involved in civil disobedience before, help them understand the tactical the proper tactics to use.
Yeah.
Which does not say that some cops aren't going to bust heads anyway, but yeah. the resistance has got to be, in order to maintain its moral superiority, yeah. it's got to be nonviolent. Sanchez, yeah. I'm glad you're out. Thanks for checking in. Stay in touch. Call me Monday.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Take care, Sanchez. Have a drink. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right.
The reason I called is I didn't know if you or Kathy had seen any of the WikiLeaks files that were released yesterday about the spy files they're called.
About what?
They're called spy files they released.
No, I haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, if you go on the website, they've got 287 so far, and it's exposing the mass surveillance industry that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've only looked at one. This one was about public safety systems and passport network of the great Libyan Arab Jemahira. I think it's the system they're trying to sell to Libya. And if you read down the document, it tells how you can monitor IP addresses, emails coming in and out, chatting.
Now, is this is at WikiLeaks.org?
WikiLeaks.ch, I believe it's at right now.
Dot what?
.org. It's at org, yeah.
Yeah, .org,
it's
okay.
It's under the spy file section, it's called.
Right.
And they can read your emails coming and sending,
mm-hmm.
and do it undetected. And even if your stuff is encrypted, they can get through it. And if this is stuff they're selling, can you imagine what they're using on us?
I think a lot of us would be very surprised to find out how much surveillance. You want to have fun sometime, just file a Freedom of Information Act about what the FBI has on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And see what you have. Hey, hold on just a second, sure. Paul. I got to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
We'll build a mighty union. We shall not be moved, just like a tree that stands by the wall.
Ten before the hour, we're talking with Paul in Canton, Georgia. I'll have to check out that. I have not seen the surveillance stuff that's at WikiLeaks now.
Yeah, like I said, I looked at only one so far, and one of the funny things is on here. It says there's different options about monitoring, like IP address, mm-hmm. ISP account, email, and then the telephone number based monitoring. It says, if available, with the cooperation of the fixed line operator. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, they got freedom to be able to do this anyway, like they're not going to cooperate, right?
Oh, Jesus, God.
Yeah.
All right, well, I will definitely check it out over the weekend. That'll be fun weekend reading, right?
Oh, yeah, it'll be real fun.
All right, Paul, thanks.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Appreciate you checking in. This hour and last has been sponsored by Chris Hovey. And he wants you to visit the website keepworthy.com for children's books and keepsake gifts that teach life lessons. And having gotten a couple of these books myself and given them, of course, to Molly, I can tell you that this is a good business, a good site, a good place. If you have kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, check them out. Seriously. All right? Just check them out. keepworthy.com. And Chris, thanks for the sponsorship. Jason in Washington, D.C.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm actually, incredibly disturbed, a few months back.
Yeah. Well, if you're not disturbed right now, Jason, you're probably
not paying attention.
Yeah, you're not conscious.
I was going through the Salon article about this whole thing, about Congress endorsing the military detention. The thing that stood out to me was the big thing in this Dave Koppel documents, quote, it was the Obama administration which told Congress to remove the language in the original bill exempting American citizens. So basically, now it's up to the executive branch that wants to run any war that they want to.
Right.
They could do anything they want to any American citizen. So, this idea that the left is this way and the right's that way, this is what I know. Anybody in power wants to keep doing what they want, and they don't want to be questioned, and they don't want to have anybody holding them back from what they're doing.
That's the truth.
And I just can't take this whole, every time I'm listening, the right says one thing, the left says anything, and when it's their side that's doing the exact same thing that they're bitching about, mm-hmm. I'm sitting around, I'm like, where are all these anti-war protesters that were out there before? They suddenly have all disappeared now. Where is all mm-hmm. the people complaining about, the Bush administration won't let us photograph the coffins coming back. Well, mm-hmm. Now Obama's in office, and I haven't seen a single picture of it now from this point going forward.
Well, no, in fairness now, that restriction has been lifted.
Do you see the pictures?
Well, that's up to major media. That's not a restriction. That's not a restriction.
Yeah, but
No, wait. Seriously, wait a second. Because I essentially agree with you here. I'm not defending Obama or the Democratic Party or either of these parties, but let's just keep it real. Obama lifted that restriction, and now if television networks that are corporate controlled, if they don't want to show it, that's up to them. But it's not the right to film that or tape that is not being denied them as it was during the Bush years. I had read something else about, not just Greenwald's article, about the Obama administration wanting that part in. Now, it immediately raises the question, if they want it left in about detaining American citizens, and on the one hand, on the other hand, Obama has said he will veto this. It'll be very interesting to see what he actually does when this reaches his desk. Because I'll tell you something, anything that passes the Senate by a vote of 93-7 is damn sure going to pass the House.
Right.
And especially when you have Republicans in control of the House. The Democrats are in control of the Senate. But this, even Al Franken, for Christ's sake, signed off on this one, which I just don't get. So anybody in that, there were three Democrats and three Republicans and one independent that said no. And the other 93, I don't know how to express the outrage. So we'll see what Obama does. To me, in my opinion, Obama has waffled on every single serious promise that he made. Whether it involved health care, whether it involved labor rights, whether it involved bailout for homeowners. Every single thing he has waffled and compromised. Let's see what he does on this one.
Thanks for the call.
All right. No, you called me. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you checking in. I can't say it enough times that the betrayal is not by the Republicans or the Democrats. The betrayal is by the entire a political class. Now, I happen to hold Republicans in higher contempt than Democrats, and that's because I've been alive long enough to realize that of the two parties, historically anyway, and I'm talking about recent history. I'm not talking about the old Southern Democrats from back in Strom Thurmond's day. I'm talking about recent history, past 35, 40 years. Democrats, to me, were ones that were still trying to maintain at least an attempt at representative government. That's gone. There might be a few members of the House and the Senate who still believe that, but it's gone. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the entire political class needs to be replaced. If you replace the entire political class, then you are, in effect, replacing the system. And that's what I advocate. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.